Welcome back to Cyber Shield Weekly. I'm Alex, and joining me as always is Sarah, our resident cybersecurity analyst.
Hey everyone, great to be back. We have a lot to unpack this week.
We really do. It is Tuesday, August 10th, 2026, and this is Volume 1, Issue 46. Here's what we are covering today. And I want to warn you up front, some of this is genuinely unsettling. Passkeys, which many of us moved to specifically because they were supposed to be the unbreakable alternative to passwords, are under attack. Not through the cryptography, through smarter, sneakier routes. We are also talking about malware being delivered through your video conferencing software installer, a poison VS Code extension targeting developer credentials, and an AI model that got paused because it became too capable at offensive cyber operations. That last one deserves a conversation on its own.
Plus, we have government alerts, a small business corner with real recovery guidance, a hands-on tech tip, and Daniel Ramos from Intelligent Automation joins us at the CTO's desk.
Let's get into it. All right, top threats. Sarah, lead us off. Passkeys. This one surprised me.
Yeah, this one landed hard. So let me back up for anyone who is not familiar with passkeys. A passkey is a modern authentication method designed to replace your traditional password. Instead of typing a string of characters, your device generates a cryptographic key pair. Think of it like a digital lock and a digital key. And the private key, your key, never leaves your device. The whole point is that a phishing page cannot steal it because you never type it.
Which is why so many organizations have been pushing hard for passkey adoption over the last 2 years.
Exactly. And last week, three separate research teams published findings showing ways to undermine passkeys, not by breaking the underlying math, which remains solid, but by exploiting how passkeys are implemented and synced in the real world. Here's the critical piece. When you sync your passkeys across devices through something like iCloud Keychain or a password manager, the private key material has to travel somewhere. Attackers found ways to intercept or reuse the signed authentication material, basically the proof that you already authenticated, to either recover the private key itself or to replay that proof in a way that lets them bypass phishing-resistant multi-factor authentication. MFA, for listeners who need the shorthand, just means requiring more than one form of verification to log in.
And the business risk here is real. If you are a company that rolled out passkeys thinking you are done with credential theft as a problem, this week's research says, not quite.
Right. And for a 50-person company, here is what this means practically. First, audit which passkeys are being synced. If your employees are syncing work passkeys through personal iCloud accounts or personal Google accounts, that is a risk. Second, check whether your identity provider, that is the service that manages logins for your company, like Okta or Microsoft Entra, has issued any guidance or patches in response to these findings. Third, this is not a reason to abandon passkeys. They are still dramatically better than passwords, but they are not a set-it-and-forget-it control.
Good framing. Do not throw out the passkeys. Tighten the sync policies. Next story, TrueConf server. This one is a supply chain attack in the most visceral sense.
So TrueConf is a video conferencing platform. Think of it like a self-hosted version of Zoom that organizations can run on their own servers. A threat actor called Headmare has been exploiting unpatched vulnerabilities in TrueConf server, specifically flaws that let them get into the server and replace the legitimate client installer with a version laced with malware called Phantom Core. Phantom Core is a remote access Trojan. That means it gives the attacker ongoing, hidden control over any machine that runs it.
So an employee goes to download the TrueConf client from what they think is their company's own server.
And they get malware instead, yes. And here is what makes this so dangerous. The download comes from inside the network. It comes from a trusted source, from your own infrastructure. Your endpoint security tools, your antivirus, they may not flag it because the file is being served from a location they trust.
What do we know about who is being targeted?
The confirmed targets so far are Russian companies in instrumentation, electronics, transport, energy, and IT sectors. Headmare has a track record of targeting Russian and Belarusian organizations. But the attack technique, compromising a software distribution server to poison the installer, that technique travels. Anyone running TrueConf server needs to patch immediately. Russian cybersecurity vendors confirmed the active exploitation.
Action item for listeners. If you run TrueConf server on premises, get to your vendor's patch page today. And the broader lesson, before your employees install anything, verify the file hash. Sarah, real quick, what is a file hash?
A file hash is like a fingerprint for a file. It is a short string of characters that is mathematically generated from the contents of the file. If even one byte of the file changes, say because someone swapped legitimate software for malware, the hash changes completely. Vendors publish the expected hash next to their downloads. You compare what you downloaded against what they published. They should match exactly.
Perfect. Okay, next, the VS Code extension story. This one hits developers hard.
So Visual Studio Code, VS Code, is arguably the most popular code editor in the world. It has a massive ecosystem of extensions, little add-ons that developers install to add functionality. Researchers flagged a malicious extension this week called Solidity Pro, published as Solidity-Pro in the marketplace, along with a companion extension called HelperBeeps.SolidityPro. Solidity is a programming language used to write smart contracts for blockchain applications, so this extension was targeting crypto developers specifically.
And what was it actually doing?
Stealing everything. Browser-based crypto wallet credentials, API keys. API keys are basically passwords for software services, and general login credentials. It is a credential stealer masquerading as a helpful developer tool.
The extension marketplace is not curated the way the Apple App Store is. Anyone can publish.
Exactly, and that is the fundamental problem. For companies that have developers on staff, even one or two, you need a policy around extension vetting. Require employees to check the publisher, check the number of installs, check the reviews, and ideally route any new extension through IT approval before installation. It sounds bureaucratic, but an API key leak can expose your cloud infrastructure, your payment systems, your customer data.
And for smaller shops that use contractors or freelancers for development work, this is a third-party risk conversation you need to have explicitly. Ask your developers what tools they are using. Make sure it's part of your vendor onboarding checklist.
Exactly. Assume nothing.
Last top threat before we go to government alerts, and this one is more of a strategic signal than an immediate patch advisory. OpenAI paused internal activities involving a model called Astra, their next-generation AI, after internal evaluations found it had reached a level of capability in autonomous offensive cybersecurity operations significant enough to trigger concern.
This is the one that maybe put my coffee down. So, to translate for listeners, OpenAI builds AI systems, and before releasing them publicly, they run internal evaluations to check for dangerous capabilities. One of the benchmarks is cybersecurity. Can this model help plan or execute an actual cyber attack? Astra apparently scored high enough that OpenAI's own safety team said, hold on.
And the company paused what they describe as some internal activities as a result. They have not said exactly what Astra can do, but we know it showed strong performance in what they call agentic coding, meaning it can independently write, test, and deploy code, combined with strong offensive cyber capability.
For business owners, here is the takeaway. We are not at the point where AI is launching fully autonomous attacks on small businesses today, but we are at the point where this is no longer theoretical. The gap between where AI offensive capability is and where your defenses are is probably wider than you think. This is an executive conversation about security investment, not just an IT conversation.
And that connects to everything else we have seen this week. Tools being weaponized, development pipelines being targeted. The surface area is expanding faster than most organizations can track.
Agreed.
Let's get to government alerts. CISA and the SANS Internet Storm Center have been active this week.
So the SANS Internet Storm Center, for listeners who are not familiar, this is a volunteer-driven threat monitoring operation that publishes daily intelligence briefings. Think of it as a neighborhood watch, but for the entire internet, staffed by some of the best security researchers in the world. This week's Stormcast briefings flagged active scanning and exploit attempts across several categories, consistent with what we have been discussing, targeting of authentication infrastructure and developer tooling.
One specific area of their guidance this week caught my attention: Linux shell forensics using a tool called Atuin. Sarah, this sounds technical. Why does a non-technical business owner care?
Good question. So here is the plain language version. On Linux systems and many small business servers, network appliances, firewalls, and cloud infrastructure run Linux. One of the weaknesses historically has been that shell history, meaning the log of command someone typed at the command line, is poorly tracked. It gets overwritten, it gets deleted, it gets corrupted. Atuin is a shell history tool that provides much better logging and structure. For businesses, the relevance is this. If an attacker gets into a server and you cannot reconstruct what they did, your incident response is flying blind.
And this connects to a broader NCSC, that is the UK National Cybersecurity Center, guidance thread this week about making forensic observability the norm for network devices. Meaning, can you actually investigate your own infrastructure after something goes wrong?
Most SMBs cannot, and that is a problem the NCSC is specifically calling out. Too many network devices, routers, switches, firewalls, ship with minimal logging enabled by default. You have to turn it on manually. If you do not, and you get compromised, you have very little to work with when you try to understand what happened.
Action item.
Call your IT provider or managed service provider this week and ask one question. If we had a breach today, do we have sufficient logs to understand what happened and when? That question alone will tell you a lot about where you stand.
And if the answer is no or I am not sure, that is your project for Q3.
All right, small business corner. Sarah, frame this week's angle.
So we are pulling from a few threads this week. The NCSC published new guidance on helping organizations recover from cyber incidents. GCHQ, the UK's signals intelligence agency, and international partners exposed a Russian state-sponsored group called Laundry Bear for running a zero-click phishing campaign targeting Western organizations. And there is that bigger AI safety statement from the NCSC CTO, Ollie Whitehouse.
Let's start with Laundry Bear, because that name is going to stick with people, and I want to make sure they understand why it matters to a 50-person company.
So, Laundry Bear is a Russian state-supported threat actor. The campaign they are running uses what is called zero-click phishing. Regular phishing requires you to click a link or open an attachment. Zero-click means the attack can compromise your system without any action on your part. Just receiving a specially crafted message can be enough, depending on the vulnerability being exploited. The campaign is described as targeting Western organizations broadly.
And small businesses might think, we are not a national security target. Why would a Russian state actor care about us?
Two reasons. First, you might be in a supply chain that connects to a larger target. A manufacturing supplier, a logistics partner, a professional services firm that serves government contractors. All of these are interesting to state actors as a pivot point. Second, opportunistic campaigns do not always have a specific target in mind. They cast wide nets. You do not have to be a priority target to get caught.
So what does a small business do about a zero-click phishing campaign?
A few things. One, make sure your email security, your spam filter and email gateway is up to date and configured to block known malicious senders and domains. Two, keep your mobile devices and desktops patched, because zero-click attacks typically exploit known vulnerabilities in mail clients or messaging apps. Three, segment your network. If someone's laptop gets hit, you want to limit what else they can reach from that device. Segmentation, dividing your network into separate zones, is not just for enterprises. Even a small business can do basic segmentation.
And the NCSC recovery guidance, what is the headline there for SMBs?
The headline is that you need a recovery plan before you need it. The NCSC published a framework this week specifically for organizations going through a disruptive incident. The key insight is that a cyber attack is not just a technical event. It is a business continuity crisis. Who has decision-making authority when systems are down? What is your communication plan for customers and vendors? Where are your backups, and how quickly can you restore from them? These are not IT questions. They are leadership questions.
And most small businesses have not answered them, not because they do not care, but because nobody has sat them down and made it concrete.
That guidance is free and publicly available from the NCSC. I would encourage every listener to pull it up this week.
Tech tip time. This week, we are walking through how to verify a software installer hash. Sarah, take a step by step like you are coaching someone who has never done this before.
Absolutely. So the scenario is you just downloaded a software installer from a vendor's website. Before you run it, you want to confirm it has not been tampered with. Here is how you do it on Windows. It is two steps. Step one, go to the vendor's download page and find where they publish the hash value. It usually looks like a long string of letters and numbers next to the download link. It might be labeled SHA-256 or MD5. SHA-256 is preferred. It's more secure. Copy that string, write it down, or paste it into a text file. Step two, open PowerShell. You can find it by typing PowerShell in your Windows search bar. Type the following, get -file hash, then a space, then the full file path of the file you downloaded, then a space, then -algorithm SHA-256, and hit enter. Windows will calculate the hash of the file you downloaded. Compare it character by character against what the vendor published. They must be identical. If they differ at all, even by one character, do not run that file.
And on a Mac?
On a Mac, open Terminal and type SHA-SUM-A256, then a space, then drag and drop the file into the terminal window to paste the path and hit enter. Same comparison process.
This takes about 90 seconds. It is one of the highest value 90 seconds you can spend before running any installer you downloaded from the internet.
And after the TrueConf story this week, I cannot emphasize enough. This applies to software you download from your own internal servers too. Verify the hash, always.
CTO's Desk. This week, we are pulling insights from Daniel Ramos, CTO of Intelligent Automation. Daniel writes with a very distinctive voice, analytical but irreverent, and I want to share some of his framing because I think it cuts through in a way that is worth sitting with.
Daniel had a great line this week. He described the passkey situation as giving, "We fixed the roof, but forgot about the windows energy." And I think that is exactly right. Passkeys were the industry's answer to phishing-resistant authentication, and they are still a significant improvement. But the attack surface shifted to the Sinclair, to the cloud infrastructure that moves passkeys between your devices. The cryptography held. The ecosystem around it did not.
And Daniel's takeaway was specific and actionable. Audit which passkeys are being synced across cloud accounts and treat synced credential stores with the same paranoia you would apply to, and this is a direct quote, a gas station sushi buffet.
Which is to say, with extreme suspicion, do not just assume the cloud sync is safe because the underlying passkey technology is sound.
On TrueConf and PhantomCore, Daniel framed it as the software equivalent of someone replacing your shampoo with hair remover. And that is viscerally accurate. You have an expectation of what you are getting. You follow the normal process, and you get something completely different and damaging.
And his point about the Solidity Pro extensions, vet every plugin like it is asking to borrow your car, translates directly to policy. Your IT team or your managed service provider should have a list of approved VS Code extensions, approved browser extensions, approved productivity tools. Anything not on the list requires a review before installation. That is not paranoia. That is basic supply chain hygiene.
The OpenAI Astra point from Daniel was the most understated and maybe the most important. He said it is the most polite way of saying, we built something scary and had feelings about it. And what strikes me is this. OpenAI is one of the best-resourced AI safety organizations in the world, and their own internal evaluation triggered a pause. That should be a data point for every business leader thinking about how quickly AI capabilities are moving.
The strategic implication is not that AI is bad or that you should stop using it. The implication is that the governance needs to keep pace with the innovation. If your company is using AI tools for development, for customer service, for operations, you need someone at the leadership level asking hard questions about what data those tools can access, what they can do autonomously, and what the failure modes look like.
And Daniel's bottom line this week was clean and repeatable. Your supply chain, your tools, and your authentication methods are all fair game. Trust nothing. Verify everything. That is not a technical posture. That is a business posture.
It is really a mindset shift. Security is not a department. It is a lens through which every operational decision gets evaluated.
All right, let's wrap up. Three takeaways this week. Number one, passkeys are not dead, but synced passkeys need governance. Audit which passkeys your organization is syncing to which cloud accounts, and apply the same scrutiny to those credential stores that you would to any sensitive system.
Number two, your software installer is an attack surface. Whether it is TrueConf, a VS Code extension, or any other tool your team downloads, verify the file hash before running it. This week's TrueConf story is a reminder that attackers are not just targeting your front door, they are targeting the delivery truck.
Number three, AI offensive capability is no longer theoretical. OpenAI paused a model because it got too good at cybersecurity attacks. That is the signal. Executive leadership needs to be in the conversation about AI governance, security investment, and how fast your defenses can realistically scale alongside the technology your business is adopting.
Three things. Audit your passkey sync, verify your hashes, get leadership into the AI security conversation.
That is CyberShield Weekly for August 10th, 2026. If this episode was useful to you, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a review. It genuinely helps other business owners find the show, and share this episode with a colleague who could use it. These conversations are most valuable when they reach the people making the decisions.
Stay safe out there. We will see you next Tuesday.
See you then.